welcome once again to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be with you here in studio. And we have a real treat for you today. We have our returning guest, Lisa Reed. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Doug. Thank you, Paul. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you back. And her topic for today is the three deadly mistakes managers make when hiring. Ooh, yeah.
We're going to save lives today.
We're going to save lives. Well, Lisa's been on the show, but let me give you a little background in case you've forgotten, because she was last on the show, I can't remember, it was the beginning of this year or the very end of last year?
I think it was February, maybe.
Okay. Well, Lisa is a sought-after speaker, besides just me seeking after her. She's also a trainer, a management consultant, who's presented to thousands of people throughout Southern California. And after 20 years in the field of management and sales, she founded her own company, Employee Management Consulting, where she provides profitable solutions that dramatically reduce costly employee turnover and teaches proven strategies to increase employee retention. In 2013, Lisa spearheaded and founded the OC Speakers Network, a talented group of professionals who collaborate to make their speaking and training business grow and thrive. And Lisa and I were just talking before the start of the show, and we're going to have her back early next year to talk about the OC Speakers Network. I've attended their meetings. She has great speakers. It's an exciting environment. You do a great job on that,
thank
Lisa.
Thank you. Yeah, great speakers. Wonderful.
So we'll cover that next year.
Yeah.
Well, more recently, she developed the Employee Management Success System, which is a convenient audio training system for managers and business. She's got a new book out, which is Manage to Success, A Guide to Cultivating Happy and Productive Employees. So, and all around, she's just a wonderful, entertaining joy to have on the show. Welcome back, Lisa.
Thank you, Doug. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you back. Let's get the mechanics out of the way. Tell people a little bit about your background and what got you to where you're at now.
Wow. Well, back in 19... No, just kidding. You know, like I said, 20... Or like you had mentioned, 20 years plus in management and sales. I started off being a Mary Kay consultant, if you can imagine that, back in the early 90s.
Did you have a pink Cadillac?
I wish I did, because they make a lot of money. But I did learn at a, you know, I was in college, and I had my little box of clients in my index cards and kept inventory and opened a business checking account, and it was really cool. I learned a lot from that.
Professional stuff.
Yeah, following up with my clients. And I had no sales training at the time, but I call it ignorance on fire. You know, just go, and people need makeup, and so I went and sold it. And Mary Kay offers a lot of great sales training, I have to say, and how to deal with people. So then I went and was in my master's program, and I taught at Cal State Fullerton for 2 years when I was 22 years old. So,
wow.
Yeah,
that's an accomplishment.
It is. Yeah. It is. And that is still one of my really proud accomplishments, I have to say, because I was teaching interpersonal communication, which ties into everything that we do.
Absolutely.
All the people we talk to. And I really value that skill. And I've always had been drawn to that, like how we speak to each other can really change the experience we have in our lives. And of course that ties into management. As I would grow in different roles throughout my life, I realized there was a gift in how I would communicate to my staff, and of course made mistakes, obviously, over 20 years. I made one, maybe two mistakes. No, just kidding.
One or two, huh?
Just one or two. One every decade. But I luckily had a lot of great mentors, but it did, looking back, it took 20 years of trial and error and learning along the way. And when I sat down and really thought about the team, the last sales team that I managed, I was really inspired by them, because quite often you're hiring people of different backgrounds and personalities, and you know, they just are different people, and they have to all get along to some. No, I don't have to, but it's nice if they do.
Yes.
To achieve the common goal, like what you're hired to do, and quite often productivity could stop with an employee if they were having a personal issue with another employee, which people get their feathers ruffled. And I had a way in managing by then that would bring the most different people together and work well together so much so that they would develop a relationship that would turn into a friendship and would turn into loyalty and having each other's backs and covering for each other and helping each other out. And it wasn't until I had left that position that I realized not everybody does that. Like, that's not common.
You know, that is so common. We those of us who've got some experience, some years in doing whatever we're doing, we tend to forget and think that everybody knows what we know and everybody does it the way we do it. And then it's like, oh, you get to somebody new who says, hey, how do you do that?
Yeah. And so that started that team was my inspiration for starting employee management consulting. I think that when this is for everybody who's listening, I think that when you really look at what makes you unique, what gifts you have, what comes easy to you, that's when you start getting close to, like, what's my life purpose? Like, why am I here? Because we think it's so easy, we don't value it sometimes, we don't recognize it. And that's where I was at. I didn't recognize that as any big deal. And as I thought about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, that is a true gift. That's a true gift that I need to share with other people. Because you're at your job more hours than you're with your family quite often. It can be very sad.
So that experience with that team, now, where did that take you then? How did that play out?
Yeah, that took me actually to Productive Learning is when I started Productive Learning, because I was in, to fill everyone in, Productive Learning is a company that provides deep transformational work. We're here in Orange County in San Francisco. And I had started taking workshops with them for about 3 years before I ever worked for them. And I would so it's like studying your mindset, your thinking, how can you have a better experience of yourself, of this life, and whether that's career, family, et cetera. And I started studying that, and I would bring that type of work into my coaching with my staff.
Okay.
And I would, you know, there are salespeople making 100 calls a day, and wow, that's, you got to be wearing that bulletproof vest at that point, you know?
Yeah. Shoot me now.
That's what most people feel like. Yet you have to keep going day after day, come in and be fresh and be ready to go. And if anything personal was going on in your life, that's not always easy to leave behind, you know, when you're getting on the call. So it was a matter of helping them have the best mindset they could to get on the phone and still be productive and have a quality of life that they deserved.
Okay. So that took you to Productive Learning, and then was it through Productive Learning that you then started OC Speaker Network?
It was, yes. So basically I do three main things.
Yeah.
I'm listeners are like, what is she, how many hours
does she
say?
There's a smorgasbord of things here. I want to make sure we get it out, because I think you forget all the things you do sometimes.
I do. So I was hired at Productive Learning to be a speaker, and I still do this. I speak for audiences all over Southern California on the topic of creating a winning mindset. And I realized that the best way to get other speaking engagements is to hang out with other speakers. And I love helping people too. So it worked out great. I'm like, I can help you. You can help me. Hey, isn't this awesome? And so I started the Speakers Network. It's actually 3 years ago this month.
Oh, wow.
So it's this 3-year anniversary. And we meet once a month and we collaborate and I always have a guest speaker in there. And we learn about how to hone our craft and help each other out. So that's where that came from.
Okay. And I don't know if you've heard me say it, but I've often referred to you when I'm talking about you with other people as a master networker.
Oh, thank you.
You know, because I think you meet so many people through the Speakers Network, mm-hmm. and you are so good at helping them make connections with one another. It's always amazing that sometimes people who are speakers, who have the guts and the ability to stand in front of 100 people and talk, are petrified in talking to 2 people.
I have had that experience with others, yes.
Yeah. And you do a great job of bringing that out. And in fact, you know, on the radio show here, as a result of The exposure you gave me to the Speakers Network, I think more than probably about 2/3 of our guests this last year came from your group.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of talent in there, and really influential, inspirational people who have a lot to share. And yeah, I've heard my name dropped on the show. Woo!
Okay, so that kind of brought us up in terms of what you're doing now. Mm-hmm. Is this your first book?
It's my first solo book.
I have
been a contributing author in another book that's more personal development based. And this one is called, Managed to Success, A Guide to Cultivating Happy and Productive Employees. And so it's my first book on my own. It's very exciting.
Congratulations.
All of you people who are thinking, I want to write a book someday, I want to give you a big shout out. Do it. You can do it.
And so we'll cover it at the end of the show, but just in case somebody dozes off or gets interrupted, how do they find your book?
They can go on Amazon and search Managed to Success. If you want to put in A Guide to Cultivating Happy and Productive Employees, you could do that too.
Or you can just put in Lisa Reed and that'll get you too.
You can put in my name, but it's spelled a little funny. It's LEISAREID. So hopefully you remember that.
I do, because every time I go to email you, I go L-I and nothing comes up.
You're like, where is that email? I know I have her in here somewhere.
Anything else different about what you're doing now in terms of career and business? You still work for Productive Learning. Mm-hmm. You still put on and manage the OC Speakers Network, mm-hmm. and you have your own company.
Yes.
Okay, for your own company, who are your clients and how do you find your clients?
I find them through networking, and I'm actually currently developing a webinar, so stay tuned. Maybe I'll talk about that in a couple more visit times.
Okay.
I'll do that. But it's really people who are newly promoted managers are my best clients. Meaning that they were really good at their job, and then they got promoted, which is very typical. And what happens is that they learn how to do the job, you're going to need to run these reports, and you need to run the staff meeting, and you need to do this, and we want these numbers, and we want this kind of result by the end, and now you're in charge of all these people, and so make it happen. Training is over.
Yep.
The beginning and the end of the training. Or you get like some HR training, but you don't necessarily get people management training. And yet that is the biggest time sucker. If you don't have quality employees or loyal employees or happy and productive employees, you are going to continue burning that candle at both ends. A lot of office drama can occur. And even hiring somebody, as you know, can take hours and hours, and actually takes 200% of this on average. That 200% of that person's salary is the cost to replace them. So
I know I've seen that statistic, and it's just
I didn't make it up.
Too scary. So what you are doing is you're working primarily with or preferably with new managers, mm-hmm. and you're helping them make the transition from technical competence to management skills.
Yes,
is that
correct?
Fair?
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, even like a sales manager, a lot of times, specifically in sales, you're a top sales producer, are great at sales, but then that doesn't always translate to management skills.
All right. Absolutely. Yeah, I experience this all the time in the coaching I do in businesses, is people go, you know, so-and-so was such a great employee till we promoted him. And they don't recognize that they promoted them based on a skill set that is no longer the primary skill set needed for the job they're in.
Right.
Guiding principle.
Oh,
we
my guiding principle.
Ask everybody what their guiding principle is.
You know, I think that this is based on actually a post I did today that came deep from my soul. And that is that we have slivers of thinking, slivers of thoughts that we can catch when we study our awareness and we really develop that muscle. And when we start to really listen to the thoughts that are going on in our mind, those little tiny ones is what can make or break like relationships or literally your experience of your life. And I think the myth is that, I've learned everything, or I've studied that, or I've done a lot of work on that. I already know that about myself. I think that's a myth, because it's really the journey of our whole life is the that's the exciting part, is that discovery of how else can I be more effective, how can I be happier, how can I be more prosperous, how can I give back. And studying those thoughts, those little slivers of thoughts, are very important.
So could I say then that your guiding principle is really a quest for knowledge of yourself?
Yes, thank you for summarizing that eloquently.
No.
Yes, I do. I've always been on a quest for knowledge. I think my husband was under this illusion that one day I was going to stop learning, or like, oh, she's going to finish that program. And I'm like, no, just so you know, never going to stop.
Let me ask you, just curiosity, because I would want to think of myself or label myself as a lifelong learner. Mm-hmm. It could be because I'm a slow learner. It could be because I'm anxious. But do you enjoy learning for learning's sake, or do you pursue learning to accomplish a task?
A little bit of both.
A little bit of both.
I think a lot of times, because there's certain things that I just have no interest in learning. But I also have been known to, I like the metaphor of Neo in The Matrix, where they just plug that thing into the back of his head and he can learn everything. I'm like, sometimes I feel like that. Like, I have so much that I want
to
learn.
Yeah.
So much I want to learn, but, you know, it does take time to process. So I think a little bit of both.
Okay. And the reason I ask that is because I have been asking people this question, and I've sort of found that people who are inquisitive about, who just want to learn things with no immediate application in their mind, eventually find out that within a relatively short period of time, that meaningless learning has an application that they hadn't been pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
That they find, I can now use it. Mm-hmm. You know, and whereas people who are just learning to, you know, I can Google it. I need to learn this. I'll Google it. Are really shortchanging themselves.
Yeah, I think especially now there's so many skills that you could learn. I mean, you could, that at one point, I'm all about delegating and farming out tasks, so I don't need to know it. I don't want to know. But I also love the journey.
Wonderful. The three deadly mistakes managers make when hiring. There's only three?
Only three. No, that's, we only have time for
three. We only
have
time
for three. There's so many.
All right, take it away. Where do you want us to start, Lisa?
Well, they all, today, what I'm talking about, even though we call it three, they're all in the same family.
Okay.
In this particular instance, and it has to do with expectations. And one of the best keys of advice I got when I was a manager was to create a list of expectations I had for my employees and to share that with them. I'm like, and I had never thought of that with all, you know, all my training and everything like that. Nope, never had heard of that. And I thought, that is a brilliant idea. And so the first one is, if you're not clear on your expectations, that's a really big mistake.
Yeah, if you can't write the list, now you're in trouble.
Yeah.
I just hired this person, duh, what are they going to do?
Right, and so creating the list, and really it's going to be different for everyone. It's not like a one-size-fits-all. But if you don't even know what your expectations are, usually, and I've you know, people have different opinions about the word expectation. The reality is we all have expectations. We just don't say what they are.
Right.
So.
But we do assume that everybody understands them.
Yeah. And we know when they're violated, when someone does the opposite, and then we get, you know, frustrated or upset or whatever, or fire somebody. So you know, we want to give them a good running chance of success. So that going through that process to avoid that first mistake is exploring, what are my expectations? What meaning, like, what time do I want them to show up to work? What do I consider late? What kind of attitude am I expecting to have in this office? Like, what kind of culture do I want to have? What kind of leader am I? How approachable am I? Like, when do they know when to come to me with something? When do they know how to communicate with me? So those are, it's really important to put that out there so that people are clear.
How does the job description fit into this expectation list? Because in the few examples you just mentioned, none of those are things I'd probably find in a job description.
Correct. That's why it's a deadly mistake.
Okay. I walked into that one.
I'll pay the $20 later.
Okay.
Yeah, because certainly there's the HR side of, like, here's what you need to take care of legally and how you're hiring people, and they read the job description when they apply for the job, and then you interview them based on, you know, that's a whole other Oprah, but
yeah,
how they hire them. But there's the skill set should be there, but that doesn't have anything to do with the manager's personality. I think I keep seeing this quote around on LinkedIn articles where it talks about people don't quit a job, they quit their manager, or they quit
yes.
the leader.
Yes. In fact, I've seen statistics that say that 85% of the people that leave a job leave it because of their manager.
That's what it is. Yeah, I was like, I couldn't get the quote right. But, and so if the manager isn't telling the person, hey, here's how to work best with me, here's what I expect, here's what the team, here's what our culture is, and of course, it's great if they include that in the interview process as well.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Easier, but at least on the first day to have in the first week to have that open conversation. Well, that we're getting ahead of ourselves because then we're starting to get into the next mistake. But the first step is to get clear on what your expectations are for the employees
and share it with them.
Well, then, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I'm jumping ahead.
You're jumping ahead.
Okay.
You're advanced. You're advanced. But if we might as well just jump ahead. So the second one is deciding what expectations you are going to share. Because not everything that you think is appropriate to share, right? There may be some things that aren't appropriate to put on a piece of paper or share with somebody. But things like,
you caught me there. Wouldn't you, if it's an expectation I have, why wouldn't I share it?
Well, see, here's the thing. I don't know. It depends on what your expectations are. This is where it gets into. It doesn't mean you can't share all your expectations, but when the first step is really creating your own list. It's
okay.
Like for my eyes only. Like, what do I really like? If I'm getting to like the heart and soul of who I am as a manager and a leader, what do I really want to have happen? What do I really expect out of my people? And then you have to take that with a second set of eyes and say, like, what out of this list is absolutely critical that my employees know?
So you're prioritizing, not screening
yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, what do they need to know so that I can create the best team and have a create agreement about that? So, like, when you have your expectations, that doesn't necessarily mean the other person 100% agrees, right?
Yeah.
That's where we have that meeting with them, like, when you've decided what my expectations are, and then you've decided what do I want to share, like you're putting it in a package of like, what am I going to share with them? And really, like, it's about them. You're cultivating your team. You're cultivating your staff, your culture. So what's important to share?
Mm-hmm.
You may even add things in there in terms of like looking at who you have already on the team. What's the company culture? What's the goal of the department or the group or the business? So there's a lot of factors can be involved.
Okay. I'm hesitant to ask a question. Can you tell me I'm jumping ahead?
Go ahead. There's no rules. We'll just make up rules as we go along.
It seems to me that in some ways I have been able to use the DISC report with a manager and the new employee together,
mm-hmm.
to get the manager aware of what the DISC report is saying the employee is looking for in a relationship from their supervisor,
mm-hmm.
from their manager, from the company. That's only half of it. What I had not thought about is I've never worked with, okay, where's the manager's list of what they want from the employee,
mm-hmm.
the expectations you're talking about. So it seems like if this was a two-way street, You'd really leap ahead time-wise in terms of creating the relationship that works.
And there's a lot of managers who are not aware of different personality types, and they may not even know what theirs is.
Yeah.
So, and we also, so there's, it's just like there's this lot of, there's a lot of expectations on a manager to really be flexible and kind of chameleon-like in terms of how they deal with the different personality types. But if they don't even know what they are, then they're not going to recognize that different people need different things. So yeah, it's like an amalgamation of the manager setting the tone, and then there's a certain, you know, if the employees come in and they are hired for this job, there's a certain, it's going to be tough if you don't adapt to the culture of your environment.
There's a certain level of expectations that are necessary to fit in the environment. But what I hear you saying also, though, is there is a need to customize those expectations for the individual you're talking to.
Right. Especially if that person, as a manager, you could fire somebody. You're going to be hiring people. So you're giving them evaluations. So I believe in setting people up for success as much as possible from the very beginning, from the hiring process, and then hopefully you're not at the firing process.
The other thing that I've observed more in the area of job descriptions, but I think it might fit with expectations, and I'd like your feedback, is that I've advocated that when people have a job description, that they take that job description with a new employee and they timeline it. Nobody is hired and capable of doing the whole job day one. And in fact, we don't trust them to do all the things we want them to do day one.
Correct.
Because we don't know them yet. I'm wondering if the same thing is sort of true of expectations. In other words, my expectations for you ultimately might be very different from what my expectations are for the first 30 days.
Absolutely. And that can go into like the onboarding side. And that's actually, I have it's a seven deadly mistakes. The seven deadly mistakes managers make when hiring. So I take a lens on hiring.
Mm-hmm.
That's available on my website. But one of them is about onboarding.
Okay.
And how do you, again, set them up for success and make sure that they feel comfortable and confident on that first day and then moving forward in, through that training program.
Let me ask this. Okay, so I've just listened to this radio show with Lisa Reed on it, and I'm all fired up to lay out my expectations for my new employee that starts the first of the year. What about all the rest of my employees that don't have the benefit of this?
That's a great question. So our third mistake is how we can be in how we communicate and keeping all these expectations a secret, right?
Yeah.
So keeping the expectations a secret is our third mistake. And so, of course, we want to create a communication strategy around that. And that will include new employees as well as existing. And here's where it can be a mistake. You need to cater it to how many employees you have. If you have 100, you may not get individual meetings with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
If you have 5, then certainly individual meetings are totally appropriate. And how you communicate that, maybe it's in a staff meeting where you have a PowerPoint, but then you have meetings set aside afterwards so that they can think about it and then come and ask questions or things like that. And the other one thing, a mistake, do not do this. Don't send a mass email with your expectations. I wouldn't do that. I say these things because this stuff happens, you guys. This stuff happens. Don't do that. It is, especially when you're giving something new, a new kind of information, like this is really, like, if it's in an email, they could read it the wrong way or not hear your tone.
Ways to misinterpret or interpret it differently than what you meant.
Right.
So you're looking for a two-way conversation.
Yes,
not one-way
like
communication.
Not like a dictatorship, but like a, here's where I'm at, I want you to think about it, and let's meet, and then if you have questions, we can talk about that, or if you have something you want to add, you know, let's have a dialogue about it and move forward. The other component, and this again, they don't teach you this in the wherever, I don't know where they don't teach it, but you learn it along the way, is there are certain people on your team who you might as well just tell them first. You know, the person who maybe is really reactive and is going to freak out at any change, you just pull them aside. Pull those people aside. Let them know. Or someone who's maybe very sensitive and needs to have that one-on-one time with you, take that time. Or the person who is the leader, who everyone's going to, you know that as soon as the meeting's over, everyone's going to go rushing to that person and say, well, what did you think? What did you think? Talk to that person ahead of time. Give them a heads up. So utilize your team to help make the transition easier and that'll set you up for success.
You know, you just made me think of a boss that I had at one time who's since passed away, Frank Hughes. And we used to joke that when Frank would have a meeting to announce a change that was taking place, we'd all go ho-hum because we'd all heard about it ahead of time. And we always thought that was silly till I realized that he had decided that the best way to communicate changes was to sort of let everybody know individually, mm-hmm. piece by piece, well before it was ever going to happen, so that by the time he got around to having the meeting, let's all get together, I'm going to announce a change, it was like, why are we having this meeting? We're all adjusted to it.
Frank sounds like a smart guy.
He was a really smart guy, you know? I was really slow in realizing how clever that was.
It is, and I had someone tell me just the other day how much they love change. And I thought, no, you don't. Nobody loves change unless it's a lottery, you know, like, oh, I won the lottery. We might love that kind of change.
Well, if you're changing to meet what I want, I love it.
Yeah. It's like my daughter says she doesn't like surprises. Well, she likes surprises like a trampoline for Christmas surprise, but she doesn't like surprises like, oh, go do your chores surprise and you were just sitting there watching TV.
You got it. Okay, so those are the three...
Deadly mistakes.
And you've kind of outlined how to handle them.
Yes.
And what to do with them. What do you think, what is the most common mistake that managers make? Well, I'm going to ask you your choice. Is it the most common mistake in hiring somebody or the most common mistake in onboarding somebody once they've been hired?
I think probably onboarding, it's quite an afterthought, or... especially like with small businesses who don't have an HR department or a training department, that's tend to be left to the owner,
yeah.
who is doing already 47 jobs, right? And so they're like, there's your desk. Good luck.
Yeah. If we've done a really good job, you have a computer and a phone.
Yeah.
You know, but that's it.
Right. And so, and it takes time. And it takes effort to put it in, and you have to think about organize, like, what do I really want them to know? How do I put down on paper or put in a training program what I've known for X amount of years? And so that can be tricky. Even if you have a training department or an HR department, there's still some onboarding that I think is really critical that can get overlooked. And that's, I call it... and this is partially, I think it's in my book as well. And we talk about, it's like the first time you see your child walk. I'm a mom, so I use a lot of examples of you know, and you're a dad.
Yes.
So you've had that experience, and granddad, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Eight grandchildren.
Yeah, I was like, I think you have a pretty big family, if I remember.
Yeah, mostly I use my dog as an example now, because the kids are adults. They don't want to be used as examples.
There you go. So you have that first day that your kids walk, takes their first steps, and then that's it. That's the first day. That's it. You can't undo the first day. You can't, you know. And so it's the same with an employee on their first day. What is that going to be like? Is anyone going to talk to them? Do they know where anything is? Even the coffee? Do they know where the coffee is? Because that's important. Coffee's important. Do they know who to go to for what? Do they know about the parking situation? Do they know where to put their stuff? Do they sit there by themselves alone eating lunch? You know, like, it's like being the new kid at school. It really is. We're all just little kids inside.
You know, it's interesting. I've done a lot of work with onboarding for a long time with companies. But all of a sudden, recently, I realized that I had been missing a key element of onboarding. All of the onboarding discussions talk about what you're doing with a new employee. I haven't seen any where they talk about what are you doing with the rest of the employees to have them handle the onboarding. And specifically, the example that I ran into was where the new employee understood what their job was, but the other people weren't really clear on what the job was that had been defined for the new employee.
Yeah.
And so a lot of uncertainty, anxiety, jealousy, you name it, exists because of lack of definition.
Yeah, and lack of communication. And
lack
it might
of communication.
Just be like, oh, well, isn't it obvious that, or didn't I tell you guys that? No.
Yeah, and the title doesn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not, oh, we hired so-and-so, he's a project manager. What does that mean?
It's something about, being inclusive, letting people, including people, bringing them in. And it's almost what I call an over-communication, just like Frank.
Yeah.
Kind of over-communicated, because the stories in our head can be way worse than what's actually true.
Absolutely. They're always worse.
They're usually worse.
What is it in your book that is key that you want us to get to? I want the teaser that's going to make everybody run off and buy this book.
One of my teasers is, I'm just going to brag a little bit here. The titles of my chapters.
Okay.
And one of my favorite, I do it like for the first date, that one's about hiring.
All right.
Hit the ground running, that's the onboarding. And we have a couple other ones. But my favorite one is get people to do stuff. And isn't it nice? Like, wouldn't you like to get people to do stuff?
Tom Sawyer.
Exactly. The king of all delegators. Yeah. And so getting people to do stuff, I actually just led a webinar yesterday for a company called Project Insight on getting people to do stuff and becoming a master delegator. And one of the biggest mistakes managers make in general, and executives and people who have very strong work ethic and are overachievers and, you know, the people out there doing it all, we get this superhero syndrome where we take on, and people ask us to do things because we're really good at it. And then all of a sudden, we're working 12-hour days and goes into the weekend and we don't have time to go work out and have a spiritual practice or do something fun or hang out with our family. So delegation.
But how can I delegate? Nobody can do it as well.
Right. I know. I heard your thing on delegation. I loved it. Right. So I'm talking to the expert of the expert. Yeah. We cover that, like the obstacles to delegation. And that's where we have to get really honest with ourselves. Like what, and again, going back to the slivers of the thinking, what am I saying to myself that's justifying me working this hard and spreading myself too thin and saying yes when I could say no? And those are sometimes some tough questions to admit.
You know, where I see it showing up many times is I will run into an employee who says, you know, they don't appreciate me.
Yeah.
And I'm not paid enough to work 60 hours a week.
Right.
And the thought that goes through my mind is, okay, why are you working 60 hours a week? Is this a requirement? Because I happen to know the boss that you have, and they don't work 60 hours a week, and they don't think you should work. So what is it that's, you know, it's sort of self-imposed extra work that then materializes in feelings of unappreciated and underpaid.
Right.
And the company's sitting back going, well, we didn't ask you to, that isn't your job description.
Yeah. I know it's funny because even though I'm telling people not to work as many hours, it's because if you do continue like that, you're going to end up being burnt out and on some kind of leave, and that's going to hurt your company way more than if you actually just worked a healthy amount.
Yeah. And in today's work environment, a number of hours doesn't equate to quality of work.
Right. Really. Right. So, and you can actually get a lot more done when you are healthy and your mind is healthy and have a good balance in your personal life as well. And you can still be amazing career executive. But one of the mistakes, gosh, we're talking about so many mistakes today. You guys are getting good stuff. Is that illusion that if I work more and more and more and more, it's going to help me get up the corporate ladder. But if you can't handle what you have now, like say you're managing, you know, 5 employees or whatever, but you want to manage more. If you're working that many hours managing 5, how are you going to grow into 10? How are you going to grow into 100? How, you know what I mean? Like
it is a sort of a self-defeating attitude. I mean, I can look back on my own career, and I started with a large company out of college, and the way I got ahead was I put in more hours, so I got more work done than anybody else, and therefore I was rewarded. I got promoted. I got more money. But at some point, all of a sudden, it was, okay, now I'm through being a college student, and I've now got a family and young kids, and I want to go home and see them walk the first time. And more hours is no longer the solution. Now what happens?
Right, and that's where you start to
you have to find what's the other tool available to you, which is, you know, working smarter, not harder. But,
and getting people to do stuff.
And getting people to do stuff, you know. And you know, I found it, and I love your thoughts on it. I think one of the biggest obstacles to getting people to do things, it isn't just the attitude that I'm the only one that can do it. It's the attitude that I feel guilty asking you to do work that I've been doing. Mm-hmm. Why? I can do it.
It's quite typically an internal obstacle.
Yeah.
More
good
than
way of putting it.
More than... I mean, how often do we know exactly how to do something or what to do? Like you said, oh, we could just Google it, like you were talking about earlier. You can Google anything, pretty much. That doesn't mean you're going to do it. Just like we know how to lose weight, eat right, and exercise.
It was interesting. I had a conversation. It was actually with my Bible study group on the difference between wisdom and knowledge. And knowledge you can Google. Wisdom you can't Google.
Right, right.
And we're talking about using wisdom in how you do your job.
Absolutely.
Not just the knowledge side.
That's right.
Hey.
I like that. I'm going to steal that.
Okay, it's yours. Well, look, we're getting close to wrapping up here, and I want to be sure that we've covered everything that you want to cover. So is there something else you want to talk about that we didn't get to or that you want to go back and make sure we...
You know,
understood
I want to give something to your listeners, if it's appropriate. I know you have a lot of coaches who are listeners.
Yeah, wonderful.
But if you have someone out there who is newly promoted, you can have them go to employeemanagementconsulting.com/free call, and they can jump on my calendar, and I'm happy to give them a free management strategy session.
Okay.
So I'll say it one more time. employeemanagementconsulting.com/free call. And they can book some time with me. Happy to do that.
Wonderful. Well, that's very generous of you. Thank you. Hey, if you don't take advantage of this, either yourself, if you're listening, or pass it on to somebody you know. Hey, it's the season of giving. Come on.
That's right. You know?
Pass on this. This is a great gift. I can tell you, Lisa has a lot more information than what we've touched on here today. And there's a lot of wisdom here that she's willing to share. So that was
a nice gift,
Lisa. Anything else?
I think that's it. I'm just excited to be here. I'm so glad that I was able to come back.
Great. Okay, so how do people get a hold of you? Give us your multi-million dollar numbers of social media contact places. Where do we find you?
So they can find me on Facebook. Again, my name is Leisa Reid, or LinkedIn, either way. LinkedIn, probably, if it's a business connection, that's always more popular.
Okay.
And those are my two
main. And your
main
company
ones.
Website?
employeemanagementconsulting.com.
Good.
And you can grab your free guidebook, 7 Deadly Mistakes That Managers Make When Hiring, especially if you're hiring in 2017, make sure to get it, please, before you hire anybody else.
Okay, so there is the second gift.
Yes, absolutely. Grab it.
Yeah, don't miss this, that if you go to Lisa's site, she does offer some material. There's some great material there that is available to download, and it's good stuff. I've looked at it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Well, wonderful. Lisa, thank you very much for coming back, being a returning guest. And I would normally say welcome to the Coaching Perspective radio community, but you're already welcome and
Yay.
Part of the community. So thank you for all that you've done with us.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks for being here. And we'll look forward to having you back next year. Well, look, if you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Be sure to check our archives for other shows with some additional great guests. Speaking of guests, if you'd like to be in the show, we're always looking for interesting people, particularly coaches or CEOs or HR professionals. Just drop me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, this is Doug Gefeller. I hope that you've enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and a caution on three things you shouldn't do in hiring new employees, and information that you can put to use immediately to help identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller.